when we think about housing for people with disabilities, you need to keep in mind that there's a huge housing shortage for low-income persons in general. This is made far worse when you're talking about a disabled individual who not only needs the bricks and mortar and figuring out how do I afford to move out of my parents' home to rent a place or to buy a place or to live in my home that I have control over. Somebody else isn't telling me who my roommates are going to be and setting rules and regulations for when I can have a cup of coffee if I feel like one, and all the other strict regulations that go along with many group homes and congregate care settings where everything's mapped out for you. So we're going to be talking, as I said, about real homes for real people. And the best way I thought in the limited time that I have, which is about 20 minutes, is to give you some case scenarios of real situations. And I've tried to choose a number of cases that give you a varied feeling for what you can do under different situations. And you'll get a much better idea of this. I'm not going to be talking about home ownership issues in terms of whether you're talking about a co-op or a condo or whatever. Those are all covered in the booklet that I've provided to you about how different housing can be owned. So refer to that for more specific information. But today I'm going to give you a few case examples and tell you what government benefits we plugged in along with the Supplemental Needs Trust to make home ownership in many cases available and affordable for people with disabilities who are on very low income. And if you're surviving on SSI or just SSDI, you are surviving on low income. I talk quickly. I apologize for that, but I always have more to share than I have time to share. So bear with me. And hopefully the little captions under your screen will help you keep up if I talk too quickly. So I mentioned about pairing government benefits with supplemental needs trust private funds or family private funds, family resources. And in some cases, not just family financial resources, but personal in-kind resources that can make it possible for a person to live separate from their families because they get individual supports from family members, be it parents, siblings, perhaps cousins, maybe good friends of the family can help out with some of the caregiving responsibilities if they need it, and there aren't enough state or public funds to provide for them. But it's critical that you become familiar with what government benefits are available. And today's conference has been excellent in terms of telling you what's out there and how to pair them with special needs funds to stretch. The whole idea is to stretch those dollars in the special needs account so that it will last the individual's lifetime. And Steve Dale talked about the ABLE account, and that's been a godsend for housing. It's made housing available for many people who couldn't otherwise afford to do so because housing is a qualified disability expense under ABLE rules. So by contributing to an ABLE account, we've been able to supplement the cost of living in an apartment or in a home without losing a third of the SSI for in-kind support and maintenance. So thank you, Steve, for going over that so well and enabling people to get a handle on how the ABLE account can pair with the Special Needs Trust to make housing available. And I think if we look at one of the responsibilities of an estate planner is to get an idea from the family what it is that they intend the special needs trust to do. And if they indicate to you, the family, your client, that owning a home or having a home of their own or living independently is important to them or to their child, then you'll want to be very careful about how much the trust is funded with. I have a strong feeling that equal shares is not necessarily equitable shares. By this, I mean, if you have three children, a third, a third, a third are equal shares, but that might not be equitable. If the other two have good paying jobs and can provide for themselves, and you've got one child through absolutely no fault of their own, can't provide for themselves, then you may want to leave a larger share, say 40% or 50% to the Special Needs Trust, with the understanding that when the disabled beneficiary passes away, that money's going to revert back to the siblings. So they're not getting a smaller share. They're getting their share in two pieces. They get whatever share is appropriate when the parent passes away and then another share when the disabled family member passes away. So equal shares are not necessarily equitable shares. And the other thing to keep in mind, as was shared earlier, about some trustees will not be trustees of a trust that contains a home. So if home ownership, I mean, I knew early on that we were going to be purchasing a home for my daughter to live in. So that was an option that we knew we had in our plan, our life plan, way back. And that was both with my daughter's input and our own feelings about what would be appropriate for her. So it was very important to find a trustee who would manage a trust that owned a home. So you, if you know that your client plans on home ownership,